Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It's always great to join you. We're midway through February. The winter's more than half over. Been an interesting day. Glad to join you. Planet Earth survived an asteroid, apparently, and Russia got hit by a smaller meteorite. Crazy stuff going on. Certainly, this does not relate to global warming. So anybody out there that now wants to blame asteroids and meteorites on global warming, I don't think you're going to get away with it. Those of you who are familiar with me know that I'm a retired senior special agent of what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service, the mission of which now currently residing allegedly, and I do say allegedly, over at ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, a division of what is called the Department of Homeland Security by the government. Mike Cutler, myself, I, on the other hand, have come to call the Department of Homeland Surrender, and we will get to that shortly. Again, if you're not familiar with my background, thumbnail sketch, I spent 30 years with the old INS, rotated through all the divisions within the investigations branch. I began my career back in October 1971, ancient history, as an inspector at John F. Kennedy International Airport. Did that job for about 4 years, where, as I have described to people, I had my eye to the peephole on America's front door, because after all, that is what our immigration laws are about, making certain that a vigilant government lives up to its obligations to make certain that we do everything reasonably possible to prevent those who would come here from other countries, people that legally are referred to as aliens, from coming here and doing harm to us. You know, whether it's because they are people that possess dangerous communicable diseases, or they're mentally ill and are violent, or sex offenders, or convicted felons, human rights violators, war criminals, spies, terrorists, that's who we're trying to keep out. That's why we have immigration laws, and that's why I was proud for 30 years to carry that badge as an immigration officer, to do my small part in keeping Americans and America as safe as we could. And in fact, really, it's an adjunct to what the military does. The military secures our borders externally. They're charged with keeping our enemies as far from our shores as possible. And from the up-close and in-person perspective, the task of enforcement of that border rests not just with the Border Patrol, certainly they're a big part of it, but also with those folks who enforce the immigration laws from within the United States, because after all, we do have 50 border states. Any state that has a seaport or an international airport is no less a border state than the states to be found along both our northern and southern borders. And so my mission, if you will, has been, since 9/11, to do everything that I could to provide my perspectives on immigration and on what's missing from what should be a coherent immigration system to safeguard our country. It should have been abundantly clear to everybody after the terrorist attacks of 1993 and then again on 9/11 that the system failed. Janet Napolitano might like to go around telling people the system worked. Point of fact, the system failed and continues to fail in a very dangerous way, and in a way that's well known to our leaders. This isn't an oops situation with them saying, gee, we didn't know. Believe me, they know, and I've provided testimony along with so many other folks before numerous congressional hearings, so that if, God forbid, we are ever again attacked by terrorists, those politicians will not easily get away with that nonsense of standing in front of the cameras and microphones and thump the podium and thump their chest self-righteously and say, wow, nobody connected the dots. Folks, we have been connecting the dots for more than a decade, and these people refuse to pick up the crayons. It's very simple. If you want to read a little bit more about my background and about all of the mischief, if you will, that I've been creating, I have a couple of websites I would really like you to go visit. First of all, I have my own personal website, michaelcutler.net. It's one word, MichaelCutler, michaelcutler.net. I also have another website, Talk Border, one word, TalkBorder, talkborder.com, where I have some of my commentaries and videos that I'm very proud of, where I spoke directly to the camera to have a conversation with the audience. Not quite the monologue of a Johnny Carson, but the stuff here isn't humorous. It's about national security and the threats to the well-being of America and Americans. Also interviewed some truly amazing people on that website, including Congressman Lou Barletta, who I was proud to assist when he was the mayor of Hazleton before he ran for Congress, was sued by the ACLU for enacting immigration ordinances that sought to punish those who would intentionally hire or provide housing to illegal aliens. He didn't do it out of xenophobia. He did it because his small, bucolic, beautiful town of Hazleton, great place. I've been there a number of times. It's always a treat to be there. Found that they were suffering the violence of transnational gangsters, primarily from MS-13, which emanates from Latin America as well as Los Angeles. This town that very rarely suffered violence of any sort was suddenly experiencing murders. Kids were being approached by drug traffickers. Everything was turned on its ear. The bottom line was that gangsters had managed to make their way to Hazleton. Being a responsible leader with a real moral compass, Lou decided to enact those ordinances. He got sued. I was his final witness. He does a great job in Congress. I'm proud to consider him a friend. He's got a great staff who works with him as well, as do some other members of Congress. But all too many members of our Congress don't get it or don't want to get it, or maybe they're getting some encouragement from the wrong side of this issue, because this isn't about being anti-immigrant, folks. It's about making certain that our laws are enforced, our borders are secured, not as a statement of xenophobia, but as a statement of common sense. The final website I would very much like for you to go visit is that of CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. They are located in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California. Great place to visit. I've got a number of great friends out there. It's a wonderful town, very different from New York, except it's still part of the same 50 United States of America. And California, if you haven't been reading the papers lately, but I think you can't avoid seeing what's happening out there, is experiencing economic mayhem, an influx of violent gangs and so forth, directly attributable not to legal immigration, although we will talk a bit about how the legal immigration system lacks integrity, but because of those who run the borders and evade that inspections process that were put into place the same way that a peephole is put on the average person's front door, to make certain that we do everything reasonable to prevent the entry into our country of foreign nationals who would hurt us. It's remarkable how the open borders crowd, and I've come to call them the immigration anarchists, vilify people such as myself, and they'll use all kinds of language and say, well, you know, you're anti-immigrant. Anti-immigrant is a painful thought. My mother, may she rest in peace, she died of breast cancer when I was in college, was herself an immigrant, came here legally from Poland ahead of the Holocaust. We're Jewish. My grandmother, for whom I was named, died in the Holocaust. I have no problem with a legal immigration system, provided that the system has integrity, provided that we make certain that first and foremost, this government of ours, that President Lincoln, that we just celebrated his and George Washington's birthday, he so eloquently talked about a government by the people, for the people, of the people. Well, gosh, folks, how is it a government by the people or for the people when the government refuses to enforce the immigration laws, and now we have an administration holding out this promise that no matter how you get here, as long as you get here, we will give you a pathway to citizenship. It is the craziest betrayal that our government has committed against the citizens of this country in the longest time. And that's why I've testified before numerous congressional hearings in the past. And I've come to call comprehensive immigration reform the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act, because it would of necessity require our government to give millions, and forget this 11 million nonsense, I'm willing to bet that if we were dopey enough to enact this disaster, this travesty, that we would wind up with at least 30 million illegal aliens. And in case you wonder where I get that figure from, let me tell you. in 1986 as an immigration agent. We were briefed by our bosses, and we were told that that amnesty enacted by the Reagan administration, this isn't about Democrat or Republican folks, this is an American issue, and both sides of the aisle have done a number on us on this and other issues. But the Reagan administration told us, the employees of INS, we're looking at about a million, no more than a million and a half aliens that will come out of those shadows. They spoke about the shadows even back then. And by the time the bureaucratic dust sort of settled, there's still some lawsuits, believe it or not, wending their way through the judicial system here. We wound up with between 3.5 and 4 million. So that's about three times the number. They're telling us 11 or 12 million. Multiply it by three, you come up with at least 30 million. And I think that's what we're dealing with. And the idea of providing people with official identity documents without even being able to interview or investigate what they write on their applications is an invitation to massive fraud. And I can tell you that the GAO, the General Accountability Office, the Office of the Inspector General, which serves as internal affairs for immigration, have all said the same thing. Fraud permeates the entire immigration system. Think about that. Fraud runs rampantly through the system because the people that file their applications know that the chance of them being caught is somewhere between slim and none, and slim left the building. Yes, every now and again you'll see a headline, oh, they locked up some lawyer, or they locked up some notary, or they locked up some travel agent, and they'll talk about how these people facilitated thousands of aliens or hundreds of aliens getting green cards, citizenship. But you'll never see anything in those articles, and this is ICE, by the way, folks, Immigration and Customs Enforcement website. You'll never see anything on those websites indicating that any effort was made to track down the aliens who went to those crooks and gamed the process to enter the United States. In fact, I was asked by Sheila Jackson Lee to testify at two hearings. The first time I testified for Sheila was in March of 2002, how two of the dead terrorists, Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi, and Atta was one of the ringleaders, thug that he was, but 6 months to the day after they obliterated the World Trade Center, attacked the Pentagon, left a plane in a hole in the ground in Pennsylvania, our government gave Atta and al-Shehhi authorization to go to flight school 6 months after the attack. Just about anybody and everybody living on planet Earth realized at that point that these guys were A, dead, B, terrorists. But that didn't stop the inept, incompetent, and thoroughly screwed-up Immigration Service from doing what they did. And I was asked by Jackson Lee's counsel in those days, a gentleman by the name of Leon Buck, if I'd come to Washington and provide testimony. Actually, when he called me up, I was absolutely stymied. I had no idea that this whole thing had transpired. I certainly agreed to testify. You can go to my website, michaelcutler.net. You can go to capsweb.org, C-A-P-S. CAPS Web, and you can see the articles I've written about this, and check out the actual hearing. I mean, this is madness, because C-SPAN has posted it permanently. And I want you to take the 2 hours or 2 hours and 15 minutes, whatever it is, and watch the hearing and ask yourself, as you listen to what went on, have we really done much differently now since that's happened? Recently, there were articles talking about how we have somewhere is around 850,000 foreign students in the United States attending 10,000 colleges. Do you think we're investigating the 10,000 colleges to make sure that they're really schools? That same GAO report said that 38% of the flight schools, this was more than a decade after 9/11, 38% of the flight schools still had not filed their required paperwork with the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration. And in fact, at least one of those flight schools, according to the GAO, this isn't some supermarket tabloid, folks. This is the official investigative arm of our Congress, the GAO, that at least one of those flight schools was found to be owned and operated by illegal aliens, and that they were training other illegal aliens in airplane flight. And so here we are. You have people working on pilot's licenses, being instructed by illegal aliens. They themselves are illegal aliens. And that's okay with our federal government. But if you're an 85-year-old woman, as we've seen, maybe incontinent, in a wheelchair, expect to be groped, searched, x-rayed, God knows what. They've done it to 4-year-old children. They've done it to everybody. Because God knows we want to keep those terrorists off the airplanes. And believe me, I do a lot of traveling. And if you become aware of opportunities for me to come to your neck of the woods and participate in a panel discussion or a debate, I'm happy to do it. You can reach me through michaelcutler.net or capsweb.org. Let me know. But I do a lot of flying. And believe me, the last thing I want is a window seat on what will be a de facto cruise missile when a plane is hijacked and used to smash into buildings. Certainly, I'm an advocate for airline safety. But is it only airliners that we need to worry about? This is absolute lunacy that we go through that kind of scrutiny, subjected to x-rays from machines that, from what I understand, haven't even been fully tested to make sure that we don't get more radiation than we should, cancer concerns, and so forth. But when people come to America, they violate the borders, they violate our laws. Nobody cares. The administration, in fact, wants to give these folks green cards, citizenship, official status. And the nonsense that we heard from the president, the border has never been more secure, we're going to put more boots on the ground, and as soon as that border is secure, darn it, we can go ahead and have comprehensive immigration reform because now the border is secure. Is that the only metric, the only thing that we need to worry about, that the border is secure? Is that really what this is about? Center for Immigration Studies issued a report. And, I mean, it was kind of astonishing to me because the report that they issued talked about how we have naturalized terrorists and criminals. Go to my website. The title was Naturalized Security Threats Retain U.S. Citizenship. I wrote this article, and it was posted on the CAPS website on February 12th, just a couple days ago. And this is what is so remarkable, that they found that people that we had given citizenship to, made them part of our country, handed them the keys to the kingdom, repaid that by becoming involved with terrorism, espionage, and the theft of intellectual property, including property that had national security implications. Dozens of instances of this. I've testified before Congress about that. So the president says, well, the border's secure, let's go ahead. The border is secure, let's go ahead. We don't even know what these people's names are or what countries they're really citizens of, but that doesn't matter. Let's give them all official identity documents, probably in false names in many cases when they're dangerous. Let's give them the keys to the kingdom because we're doing such a sterling job right now. The president invoked what he called prosecutorial discretion. I called it prosecutorial deception on June 15th last year to provide, quote-unquote, young people, young kids, children, up to age 32, I might add, with a pathway to citizenship if they simply claim that they were brought here as children by their parents. But again, no resources to conduct investigations, no way of knowing who they really are. And we're told, well, they're going to do a security check. So let me give you a little bit of an inside perspective, and then I want to get to that headline that really lit my fuse. And my friend Dave Stoddard, if Dave is listening, I thank you, Dave. Dave is a retired U.S. Border Patrol officer. We are colleagues. He contacted me yesterday. I guess he felt that my blood pressure wasn't high enough, so he gave me some news to see if he couldn't boost it a little bit, and he did. Thankfully, high blood pressure is not a problem that I'm concerned with. I'm in good shape, if you consider round the shape, I guess. But you look at the lunacy that we are experiencing where we are giving status to people that the president said were kids without interviewing them, and he said we're going to fingerprint them. And everyone says, oh, well, they're doing security checks, so that's okay. No, it's not. Because the way it works, this is the inside scoop for you, listen closely, is that the fingerprint records don't relate to all over the world, only to the United States and a few other countries. So if you have a terrorist whose fingerprints are not on file because they were never arrested in the United States or Great Britain or Germany, let's say they came here, they snuck across the border, right? No fingerprints on file. They provide a fake name. The government, our government, will run the fingerprints. When they come back, no record. And when the fake name obviously is going to come back, no record. The presumption is made that this person is okay, and within 24 to 48 hours, we will issue them an identity document that they can immediately use to get a Social Security card, a driver's license, a library card. And that's significant, that library card, because that means access to the Internet in many communities under an assumed identity, under the radar. They can get credit cards, get loans, get a job. And if that job has national security implications, that's a problem. If the job has critical infrastructure implications, that's also a problem. I worry about the people who handle our food. I worry about all of those jobs that can impact the well-being of our country or our citizens. So we're talking about a massive program where aliens whose identities can't be verified would be given official identity documents in any name that they claim so that we can satisfy this idea of prosecutorial discretion to ignore the laws. And in fact, there are lawsuits pending. There was a hearing held by Chuck Grassley's, Chuck Grassley participated as the ranking Republican, but the Senate Judiciary Committee held that hearing. I know his people worked very diligently on it. They really did a great job in doing what they could to put that hearing together with the Democrats. Of course, the Democrat side, it blows my mind. You know, I'm registered as a Democrat. I think the wheels came off that wagon a long time ago. We have a situation where the administration has, in my judgment, having worked for the INS for 30 years, issued illegal orders to their agents. It's one thing for an organization to tell their people, we are not going to aggressively enforce a law. It's something else to block someone from making an arrest and then giving lawful status to people who violate our laws when there's no justification for doing it other than a decree, if you will, by the President of the United States. It puts the agents in a terrible spot because they have come to understand, just as the Border Patrol agents did, and not just under this administration, but under George W.'s as well. Think of Border Patrol agents Ramos and Compion, who went to jail. They engaged a drug trafficker. Shots were fired. They wound up going to jail. The drug trafficker got a pass. Remarkable stuff going on. So we've made it clear to those people who were charged with securing America's borders and enforcing our immigration laws that no matter what they do, they've got a problem. They put their lives on the line, not unlike our soldiers. They're out there protecting us, and if they make the wrong arrest, they get into trouble. If they respond to a danger to their lives, they may wind up prosecuted. If they react too slowly, they may die. But where can I get a job like that? I look in the mirror, I see all the gray hair, and I think, wow, growing old is not fun. Of course, it beats the alternative. But I certainly would not want to go back to my job such as it now exists, especially under this administration, where you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. One of the very first hearings I did, in fact, I did this hearing right after 9/11, and my agency reacted with great understanding. I was removed as an agent the morning after I testified for Tom Tancredo when he headed up the Immigration Reform Caucus, November 2001, just weeks after 9/11. And I gave him a quote that he put on his website. And my quote was, big cases, big problems, little cases, little problems, no cases, no problems. There is little incentive for our ICE agents to go out there and do the job we pay them to do because I will tell you, they are not only being hamstrung and handcuffed by this administration, but they are facing the very real prospect of losing their jobs or worse if they try to do the job that they took an oath to do. This is madness. And with that for the backdrop, We have President Obama. We have Chuck Schumer, my former congressman who was never my representative. We have Harry Reid. We have John McCain, both sides of the aisle. You know, it's just remarkable. It's both parties, folks. It's about America. It's not about the Democrats or the Republicans, but you never know it by the games being played. But they are pushing for a pathway to citizenship for illegal aliens. Mind you, we naturalize over a million aliens, or we give our green cards, rather, to over a million aliens every year, 1.1 million. These folks are on the pathway to citizenship. We don't need to create a means of giving citizenship to aliens, as the president makes us think. There is a process in place, but it starts with being legally admitted into the United States, getting a green card, meeting the requirements. Now we're told, well, the illegals are going to be put on the back of the line. That I was watching Fox News, and this young lady was being interviewed, and she said, well, I'm glad the president said we're going to put those illegals on the back of the line. Folks, it's more sleight of hand. It's magic act, okay? The back of the line is meaningless because the line is still inside the United States. The line to what? Citizenship? How many of these folks really want to be citizens? They want to work and they want to send money home. And every year, tens of billions, with a B, tens of billions of dollars get sent home back to their home countries. Money that is lost to the American economy utterly. Money not earned by Americans or lawful immigrants. Money not spent in America. Money not invested in America. And the president kept talking about jobs. We're going to create jobs, more jobs, middle-class jobs, minimum wage jobs, and on, the word jobs. If I had a dollar for every time the president said jobs during the State of the Union, I could get a steak dinner at a pretty fancy restaurant. Jobs. But nobody seems to have the integrity or the smarts, I don't know what it is, to say to the president, Mr. President, why in the world would you want to dump millions of newly authorized workers into a labor pool that can't find work now? How in the world will that help America or the American economy? How in the world will it help we, the people, those folks who can't find work or are finding that because there's so many workers being dumped into the labor pool, that labor being a commodity, not unlike diamonds, not unlike petroleum, loses its value. The price goes down when the amount of that commodity goes up and the demand for the commodity remains flat. This is about as dopey as it gets, but nobody's talking about that. I did get a brief opportunity on Neil Cavuto's program a couple of weeks ago when Eric Bowling sat in for Neil, and we did talk about it. But now I want to get to the heart of this article that lit my fuse yesterday, thanks to Dave Stoddard. And here's the story. Chicago, Illinois has now declared that they have a new public enemy, number one. Chapo Guzman. Think about it. Al Capone was declared public enemy number one in Chicago during Prohibition, when Al Capone was out there with his gang, killing and shooting and robbing and doing all the damage he did. Chapo Guzman has now been lofted to that elevated position in the annals of criminal justice in Chicago. He is now the top dog. If Chapo Guzman's name is not immediately familiar to you, let me tell you who he is. And then we will get back to a discussion about the border. By the way, if you want to call in and join me in this conversation, my phone number here is 310-982-4145, 310-982-4145. Chapo Guzman, folks, is the head of the Sinaloa drug cartel. That's who he is. And the mayor of Chicago and the police in Chicago said the damage being done by this guy and his cartel and those that traffic their drugs on our streets is a serious problem. Jack Riley is the head of DEA in Chicago. He was when CBS News interviewed him not long ago. And I posted that story also at capsweb.org and on my own website. And it was all about how, if you look at what's going on, Chicago has wound up looking more like a Mexican border town. That was the story. And it was remarkable, because here you suddenly have the city of Chicago finding itself getting hammered by the violence associated with drug traffickers who are working for the Mexican cartels. Can you envision that? Can you imagine anything more ridiculous for an American city to be in that situation, while at the same time we're being told, guess what? Our borders are secure. Folks, let me tell you something. If the borders were secure, the drugs could not get here. If the borders were not secure, understand that there would be no way of the drug traffickers coming here. In my experience, when I was assigned to the Unified Intelligence Division, the DEA, what you should know is that I did a survey. I did an analysis of the arrest statistics. And it was interesting, because today everything is on a spreadsheet. You know, you push a button on your computer, and you look at the screen, and there it is. Well, back in 1988, when I was the first INS agent assigned to the Unified Intelligence Division of DEA in New York, I went to one of my bosses. I had a brain spasm, and I said, hey, I'd like to see all your arrest records so I can figure out who we're arresting up here. And they said, okay, we'll get it to you. I waited about a week, and I came to work one day, and it was the old story about being careful what you wish for, because you may get it. And I came to work, walked up to my desk, and couldn't find it. There were boxes on top of my desk, under my desk, on my chair, around my desk. And as I stood there scratching my head, figuring out what I was going to do with all these boxes, which contained paper arrest records, there was no spreadsheets, a clerk with a hand wagon, hand cart, hand truck, whatever they call those things, was delivering even more boxes. And my boss, who was a cop, New York City police sergeant, he was the supervisor of the intelligence unit that I was in at the time, came up, laughed like crazy, as was everybody else in the office, patted me on the shoulder, and he said, there you go, Mike, you asked for it, and by God, you got it. And it took me about 3 months to dig my way through that mountain of paper. And when I got done, I was amazed. Back in 1988 in New York City, 60%, 60% of the people that we were investigating up at the DEA task force in New York City were identified as being foreign-born. 30% nationally. This is not just about the four border states. You know, the president talked about the four border states. Boots on the ground, those states are... It's nonsense. And the drugs aren't just coming across the Mexican border, troubling as that is. And Mike McCall, who heads up Homeland Security, he's the congressman, just became the chairman of Homeland Security, had a study done. It was released November 15th, just before he came over as chairman of Homeland Security. He was the chairman of a subcommittee at Homeland Security. He commissioned the study called The Line in the Sand, talking about the violence in Mexico, how the Mexican cartels are working in close cooperation with Middle Eastern terrorist groups, Hamas, Hezbollah, probably Al-Qaeda. We know there are terror training camps in the tri-border region of Brazil. There are Iranian shock troops arriving in Venezuela every week, direct airline flights from Iran to Venezuela. So we know we've got this big problem, but it's not just the Mexican border. When I was at Kennedy Airport, we saw drugs coming in on a daily basis into John F. Kennedy International Airport, 2,500 miles from the Mexican border. Understand that every state is a border state. Understand that every community is at risk. Understand that these drugs that are being sold on street corners are destroying lives, are responsible for the great majority of crimes committed in America, many of them violent crimes, is having a huge negative impact on quality of life, on the economic situation of the United States, and on young people's lives. It's almost impossible for anyone to feel that he or she, directly or indirectly, is not being impacted by the drug trade. And now, as it turns out, the money that's going into the coffers of the drug cartels is also making its way into the coffers of the terrorists who want to kill us. And we're told the border is secure. The border is secure, yet today, just today, Christian Science Monitor published a story about Chicago. Just today. And here is the title. Who is El Chapo Guzman, public enemy number one? And then the subtitle, Chicago has resurrected its public enemy number one designation, not used since it was created for Al Capone, to label Mexican drug kingpin Joaquin El Chapo Guzman Loera. Let me read to you how this report starts out. A drug kingpin, this is now an article in the today's edition of the Christian Science Monitor. A drug kingpin of Mexico who has never set foot in Chicago has been named the city's new public enemy number one, the same notorious label assigned to Al Capone at the height of the Prohibition-era gang wars. The Chicago Crime Commission announced the move on Thursday, saying it considers Joaquin El Chapo Guzman even more menacing than Capone because he's the leader of the Sinaloa cartel, which supplies most of the narcotics sold in the city. What Al Capone was to beer and whiskey during Prohibition, Guzman is to narcotics, said Art Bilk, the commissioner's executive vice president. Of the two, Guzman is by far the greater threat, and he has more power and financial capability than Capone ever dreamed of. Think about it. Now, understand the way it works. Think back to that figure that I gave you of my days up at DEA Intelligence when we found that 60% of the people arrested in New York by DEA and the DEA Task Force for Drug Trafficking were foreign-born. The way the cartels operate is they don't just mail dope from Mexico to New York and say, there you go. No. It doesn't work that way. What they do is they send their people to New York, their enforcers, their money people. It's like a car dealership. You know, you have mechanics and salesmen and account executives and so forth. It's an entire organization. They have to move the drugs. They have to send it, you know, to people out there that are out on the street level dealers. They have to make sure they get the money back. Then they have to find a way of moving the money from the United States back to Mexico. Sometimes it's remittances. Sometimes they will buy gold. Sometimes they will buy appliances and shove the money into the appliances. I mean, the way they do it, the creativity would blow your mind. Because at the end of the day, that is why they are in business. They are in business not to help people get high. It's like saying that hookers are hookers because they want to show men a good time. No, hookers are hookers because they want to separate the men from their wallets. They want the money. The drug cartel wants the money. And they are ruthless. And if anybody interferes with drug traffickers, interferes with the profit, interferes with the product, they will kill them. They will kill them. They will kill family members. They will send a message of violence. That is how they operate. So realize what we've got going on. The drug traffickers send their people here. And the reason they want their people here? Because they know that those people understand that if they are found shortchanging the cartel, pocketing some of the dough, pocketing some of the money, their family members will pay the price. When Felipe Calderon, the previous president of Mexico, was in office, during that period of time, it was estimated that at least 60,000 Mexicans were killed. Not just drug dealers, not just gang members, innocent people that were in the wrong place at the wrong time, people that maybe they thought would inform on them. Police officers were given a choice, silver or lead, silver meaning a bribe, lead meaning a bullet. They did the same thing to judges, to prosecutors, to members of the military. And they didn't just kill people, they mutilated them, they beheaded them. They hung headless bodies with spray-painted graffiti as sort of grotesque billboards from bridges telling people, you talk to the police, your body will be up here next. Or if not your body, maybe one of your kids, or maybe your spouse, or maybe your brother or your sister. And that's what they did. It was wholesale murder and mayhem at the hands of the cartels. So they send their people here to control the trade, control the money, make certain that all the money goes back to the cartels in Mexico. And that is the evil that we're confronting. And we're being told that the situation is under control, even while the city of Chicago, Obama's home city, where, by the way, he showed up today because of the extreme gun violence, and they have the toughest gun laws, even eclipsing New York City's tough gun laws. But the border is secure, boys and girls. Nothing to worry about here. Nothing to see here, folks. Just move along. And then Dave Starter told me something else that was interesting, and I've been doing some research into it. The government recently took to the strategy of putting balloons up, newer ones. It's been done for quite some time, though, the idea of using these observation balloons that use electronics, what they call the aerostats. They look like blimps, but they're tethered to the ground. Well, guess what? The border is so secure that they've decided not to spend any more money on them, and apparently they're now about to take those balloons down. But the borders are secure, so why do we need them? Those people in Chicago, I have no idea what they're complaining about. This is the situation we're confronting today. We're told that the borders are secure. Chicago declares the head of the Sinaloa Mexican drug cartel to be public enemy number one because of the impact he is having on crime and violence in the city of Chicago. By the way, for those of you who are rusty on your geography, Chicago is not to be found in one of the so-called four border states. It's not in California. It's not in New Mexico or Arizona or Texas. It's in Illinois, way north and due east of the Mexican cartel. It's in the heartland of the United States. It's almost in the geographic center of the United States. Not quite, but almost. So now ask yourself, how secure is the border if all those drugs and the drug traffickers hold so much influence in the city of Chicago that they have declared Chapo Guzman public enemy number one? But we're told the border is secure. Absolutely astonishing. And we listen to the politicians who are tripping over themselves to create comprehensive immigration reform. They have the gang of eight, these eight politicians from both sides of the aisle saying, oh, yes, this is what we need to do. We're going to have comprehensive reform. We're going to provide unknown millions of aliens with the authority to work in the United States. The hell with Americans who can't find jobs. The hell with the college kids who come out of school with degrees, can't find a job, but have to pay off student loans that look more like a mortgage payment than a student loan payment. And the beat goes on, and we're told this is acceptable. If this doesn't smell of a betrayal of everything that is supposed to be accomplished by our government, I don't know what does. It's not anti-immigrant to say that this is crazy. You should also know that the violence that's perpetrated by transnational gangs, and it's not, by the way, just within the Latin American community. This is throughout every ethnic immigrant community, whether it's the Russian community, the Asian community, the Caribbean community. The gangsters in those communities are making the lives dangerous and difficult for everyone, but the biggest impact is on the members of the same ethnicity as the gangsters. This is just the way it works. And by the way, here's another article just to read a headline to you. And this comes, again, from the ICE website. Mexican drug traffickers sentenced on drug conspiracy charges. Conspiracy manager forfeits $750,000 in cash. That was the ICE headline. Now, guess where this was? Rochester, New York. Rochester, New York. Almost on the exact opposite side of the continental United States from the Mexican border. And here we're talking about Mexican drug traffickers. And here's how it starts. Rochester, New York, two Mexican drug traffickers were sentenced on Friday for their roles in a cocaine conspiracy. The sentence is the result of an extensive investigation by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Homeland Security Investigations, and the DEA. So here we go again. Once again, we are talking about the impact. It goes on and says, according to the court documents, the defendants were involved with a group of individuals that distributed over 150 kilograms of cocaine from Mexico into the United States between 1991 and 2008. During the course of the conspiracy, cocaine was transported to and distributed in Rochester by members of the conspiracy. Cocaine was also provided to Houston, Chicago, New York, Atlanta, and the New England region of the country. This is not just about four border states. And look at it, folks. This is something that, according to this report, was going on for nearly two decades, distributing the drugs from Mexico throughout the United States. But we keep being told about the four border states. I mean, this stuff is so remarkable that it leaves me shaking my head. We have another report. Again, this is the ICE website, their news releases. Canadian woman pleads guilty to drug trafficking and money laundering. Not the Mexican border in this case. It was the Canadian border. And guess where she pleads guilty? Philadelphia. During the summer of 2006, HSI, Homeland Security Investigations, by the way, HSI is part of ICE. They're just upset because the word immigration might give people the idea we're serious about the immigration laws, and God knows we're not serious about those laws, are we? But anyway, it goes on and says, during the summer of 2006, Homeland Security special agents were investigating two Philadelphia-based drug traffickers, John Q. Lee and his then-girlfriend, Han Duong. Lee was one of the largest drug dealers on the East Coast with a network of customers stretching from New Jersey to Florida. He imported large quantities of marijuana from various drug trafficking organizations in Canada. In Canada. But we're told the four border states along the Mexican border. And on it goes. I don't know how else to make people understand the nature of the problem. Let me give you one more. February 8th. This was just last week, the ICE website. You can go to the ICE website, or you can read my stuff at capsweb.org or michaelcutler.net. But here's the headline. New Jersey fugitive makes initial court appearance after 3 years on the run. And the story begins. A former Passaic County man who's been a fugitive since 2009 made his initial court appearance Friday. The investigation leading to his apprehension was conducted by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Homeland Security Investigations, the FBI, and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. Kutch Tim Lika, 47, formerly of Passaic County, appeared in Newark federal court today, Friday, to face numerous charges, including narcotics and firearms trafficking, money laundering, interstate transportation of stolen property, and criminal conspiracy. According to court documents, 3 years ago, 26 individuals were charged, including Lika, with multiple crimes in conjunction with an investigation into several loosely connected Balkan criminal enterprises operating throughout New Jersey, New York, Chicago, Philadelphia, Canada, and the Netherlands. The Balkans, by the way, if you remember, is Eastern Europe. Again, not just the Mexican border. What we really need to understand is that this is not about being racist when you say let's enforce the immigration laws. It's the members of the Latino community that suffer the most from the members of the Latino gangs, just as is the case with the Russian organized crime groups and the Russian community, Asian organized crime and the Asian community, and so forth. Now, here's another beaut. Maryland woman pleads guilty to recruiting a teen in sex trafficking ring. This is, again, ICE website, February 13th, just a couple days ago, 2 days ago. Alexandria, Virginia, not the Mexican border again, folks. An illegal alien from El Salvador, and I'm impressed that they actually use the terms, that's right, illegal alien from El Salvador, pleaded guilty today to recruiting a 15-year-old runaway to engage in commercial sex for a prostitution ring. Formerly from Adelphi, Maryland, Yanara del Carmen Guerrera Andrade, a.k.a. Yadara or Litzy, there's a name, Litzy, don't you like that name, 28, was apprehended following an investigation by U.S. and Customs Enforcement, ICE, Homeland Security, with the assistance from the Northern Virginia Human Trafficking Task Force. Guerrero Andrade pleaded guilty to child sex trafficking, which carries a mandatory minimum of 10 years and a maximum of life in prison, sentencing scheduled for May 10, 2013. They don't talk about the young girl who was forced into prostitution. I'm willing to go out on a limb and tell you she was probably a Latina. This is the kind of violence and the kind of lunacy that I fought against for 30 years as an immigration agent. And to listen to the politicians and to listen to this president make light of our borders, make light of our immigration laws, so that more of this insanity can continue is crazy. And for those of you who are going to say, well, wait a minute, they arrested these people, they are arresting the tip of the iceberg. New York City police has between 35 and 41,000 cops, depending on what year and where the economy is. We are at that low right now, that low ebb of 35,000. You have no idea how much hand-wringing has been going on in New York City, folks, by the politicians who are concerned that because we don't have as many cops as we'd like, that we've got a problem. You know, I've got a caller here. Let's see who we've got here. This is Mike Cutler. Who's this?
This is Snowball. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm fine. Who is this? I'm sorry.
I'm Alice Snowball from Douglas, Arizona.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing fabulously. Sorry I've had you on hold for a while. What would you like to tell my audience?
That's okay. I'm just listening to you, and I'm in agreement with you. I'm here in Douglas, Arizona at the border, and our border is porous. And not all the border is built. Therefore, illegals come in every day by the drove.
How secure do you feel living in Douglas?
Well, me, I'm used to the city, but it's not secure. We have 24 streets in our city. It's a border town to Agua Prieta, Sonora, Mexico, and our city is infested with illegals. We have some houses that have five police living there, and the sad part is that the Border Patrol, their hands are tied behind their back, and they're not allowed to touch anybody.
I'm sorry, I missed your first name. If you could say it more slowly, I apologize.
My name is Alice, A-L-I-C.
Alice, okay. Alice, let me ask you a question. Let's be real blunt. I'm listening to your perfect pronunciation. You know, I studied Spanish at the Border Patrol Academy, and I have a feeling that you are a Latina. Am I correct?
Yes, I'm a United States citizen with Mexican ancestry. I was born and raised in Douglas, Arizona.
Okay. So I don't think you're anti-Latina.
No, I'm anti-illegal immigration.
Thank you. And that's the point I've been trying to make for the longest time. How does it make you feel knowing that you're here as an American citizen? I'm sure you have family members who legally immigrated to the United States and played by the rules. Don't you feel the sense of betrayal over this?
Yes. Well, see, Mr. Cutler, what's going on, there's millions of us United States citizens with Mexican ancestry that are against this. I was born here. I really don't have family members except maybe way back that came from Mexico. Because I've been here for a long time. Well, I was born here.
You've been
here.
Anyway, that is a long time.
We are offended. We want all the illegals to go home. We don't want them here. We're patriots. There's so many, like I told you, United States citizens with Mexican ancestry that we're against this. We're against illegal immigration. We're against the amnesty. They're trying to pass through right now. We're against illegal voting. Millions of illegals are registered to vote in all states. The loophole is in the voters' registration. And then, Mr. Cutler, if I may,
sure.
So people can be aware of what's really happening. Here before me, I have remittance hit $534 billion in 2012, setting a new record. This was reported by the World Bank. Okay, and next, and you know, China, who we owe a lot of money to, how much money do you think they got in remittance in 2012? $66 billion just to China. Mexico got $24 billion, the Philippines 20, 24 billion, and so on. And I'm going to send you this if you want me to. But if people
absolutely,
will see
and I'd like to stay in touch. You have my email address. If you could send me an email, I'll add you to my list for commentaries and so forth. I do want to speak with you off the air, but let me ask you a question though, Alice, because this is you have my email address, yes?
No, sir. But you can give it to me in a little while.
All right, that's fine. I'll call you back after the program is over. But here's the thing that I'd like to know. Maybe I'm crazy, but every Sunday we watch the Sunday talking shows. You know, the news heads are out there, and they talk about this mythical Latino vote. Now, I happen to be Jewish, and I hear about the Jewish vote, the Latino vote, the black vote. I don't know about you, but to me it smells of an insidious form of profiling. How can anyone look at you or your name and say, oh, we know who Alice is going to vote for because she's a Latina? Doesn't that offend you?
Yes, it does, sir, because I'm a Republican. And first of all, people need to understand when they're talking to Latinos, they're not talking to the United States citizen with Mexican ancestry. They are talking to illegals because Hillary Clinton and, W. Bush, Obama, all of them, they know that illegal voting. As a matter of fact, Obama, he's congested his administration with the Aztlan movement, and the way you spell it is A, Z as in zebra, T, L, A, N. And the Aztlan movement, people can look it up on the internet, and they will respectfully, this is my worst word because I don't say bad words, freak out when they see who Aztlan is. And if you don't mind me saying it, I'll say
what
it is.
Absolutely. Keep going.
Without offense to nobody, it is a radical Islamic Mexican Catholic movement that plans on taking over the United States. They plan, sir, to take over our country on December 21st, 2012, because they were telling Mexican people from Mexico that the world was going to end. That day, it didn't work. But right now, Mr. Cutler, what's really happening, we have hundreds of thousands of elected Latino officials that are part of this movement of Aztlan. And not only are they part of this movement, I don't know, sir, if you've ever heard of Naleo. N-A-L-E-O. That's an increment for the national appointed and elected officials. I don't know. Have you ever heard of them or no?
No, this is a new concept and a new term for me.
Okay, well, look it up. It's Naleo, N-A-L-E-O. Rubio is a part of it, Hillary Clinton. And Rubio, respectfully, he's not one of us. He's a traitor, respectfully. He's part of the Aztlan movement, even though the Aztlan movement is a Mexican organization, terrorist organization, so respectfully again. And this organization is a terrorist because they believe that the United States belongs to Mexico. If you don't believe me, then I would tell people to get into the Tucson Unified School District, which would be TUSD, and get into ethnic studies. And right there, you will see YouTube videos where the kids take over the school board in the Tucson Unified School District, sir, and they start yelling Mexico, that this is Mexico. Well, what we're doing right now, I don't know if you're aware of this too, sir, last year we stopped ethnic studies in the state of Arizona. And what we did, we proved that in the Mexican-American books, the study books, they're teaching the Latino kids kill the gringo or the white man. And so we went and proved it, and the writers of this book are all Aztlaneros. And respectfully again, Sotomayor is part of the Aztlan movement, Hilda Solis, Ken Salazar, you have his brother, you have, like I told you, hundreds of thousands, and people you can find all these people basically on Naleo. If you get into Naleo, N-A-L-E-O, people will say, oh my gosh, these people have a conspiracy going against the United States. And the goal, sir, I'm going to tell you what they are too, in case you haven't heard this, they're anti-Semitic. The Aztlan movement is anti-Semitic and anti-United States. And to get a little bit further on this, you know, Mexico trying to take over the United States. I don't know if you ever heard this, sir. They wanted to take over the United States. They said that California, Arizona, Texas, and New Mexico belong to Mexico, and that we only paid them 20 pesos, which is less than a dollar, okay? And that's what the territory they wanted to take at one time. Now it's the whole United States. You don't believe me? Then I would tell people to look into the Zimmerman telegram, 1917. You know what happened then, sir? The Germany sends a telegram to the ambassador that is in Mexico from Germany and says, if Mexico will become our allies, they become our allies against the United States, we will help Mexico take away from the United States during the Mexican-American War, the territory that the United States took away from Mexico. Well, the United States, we decoded that telegram, and that, sir, is what started World War One. That is how far this Aztlan movement goes, and further than that. I could get into many things. I could tell you everything you need to know. You'll say, well, Alice, how can this be Catholic? Well, I'll tell you how it's Catholic. Virgin Mary is not Virgin Guadalupe, for all your audience to know. Virgin Mary in the Catholic Church is the little idol with a little white robe with a little blue cloak. Guadalupe is the one you're going to see her all over the United States now. She's the one that has green and pink, and she has a little angel, and there's a little crescent in between her feet and the angel. That crescent is Islamic. And I'm going to scare you a little bit more. The Catholic Church started Islam in the 4th century.
That's kind of hard to believe, I've got to tell you.
And I will tell you, sir, I will send you emails on everything I said, because I will never speak anything out of opinion. I will always say everything factual evidence. And you'll say, why? Because since year 2000, when I found out that illegal voting was taking place here in Precinct 2 in Cochise County, I was before the Superior Court, and they laughed at me. And then before you knew it, then I realized it was not just in Cochise County. It was in the state of Arizona. Then I continued going, and it's in all the states. And if people will see where the loophole is, it's in the voter's registration. It says you have to be a United States citizen to vote.
Yes.
We're not, do not continue.
And they started.
And they do not ask for birth certificates.
I've seen many reports on this, and you know, one of the issues with the driver's license, this motor voter law that Bill Clinton pushed through, was to enable people to register to vote when they get their driver's licenses, and this is all linked back to this idea of providing the illegals with the driver's license.
Correct, and that is why we have millions of illegals that are registered to vote, and now people say, well, who cares? We should care, because you have to understand, in Mexico and all the nations down south from that, it is mandatory for them to vote. So for them to vote here is very simple, as long as they can do it, you know, it doesn't matter if they have to do it illegally. And so we see it as a privilege to vote. So a lot of United States citizens don't even show register to vote or go to the polls. Okay, but Mexicans are going, and they're changing everything. And you'll say, why is it changing? Now, Obama, in 2008, Mr. Cutler, you know what he did? I don't know if you remember what he had that monitor going. Yes, we can.
Yes, it was Cisse Pueda.
Yes, we can. They got it from the Si Se Puede.
Yes.
From, and the Si Se Puede, it's really, if people, when you see Aztlan on the internet, people will see when they start chanting over here, Si Se Puede, Si Se Puede.
Yeah.
And what they're saying, yes, we can take over the United States. Mr. Obama is connected to Dolores Huerta. He's connected to the Aztlan movement. Hillary Clinton is connected to the Aztlan movement, and so is John McCain.
Well, let me.
Sir,
hang on. We're running over. you're making some interesting points. I don't know how accurate all of this is. I'll be very honest with you. It's thought-provoking. I do know that in my view, what we are not getting is the security of our borders or the enforcement of immigration laws that just have two goals: protect innocent lives and protect the jobs of American and lawful immigrant workers. There's a serious problem. I don't know if it's attributable to Aslan. Again, I understand what you're saying, and I'm giving you an opportunity to express your opinion. But my concern is that corporate America, in looking for open borders, if you look at what happened in Mexico with NAFTA and CAFTA, drove Mexican farmers into poverty, they headed north. The big conglomerates, ADM and the others, made a ton of money by undercutting the Mexican farmers. So what's really happened here is an economic situation for the corporations.
Correct.
And so what we've done is to destroy Mexican farms. We've destroyed parts of the Mexican economy by allowing American corporations to do this, which doesn't help America in the eyes of the world, because people look at America, they don't say, well, it's the American people, it's their government, it's this, it's that. It's easy to just simply say America is the problem. By allowing corporations to take these incredible acts and to pass these treaties and so forth, we are undermining America's position in the world, and we're enriching people at the very, very top of the food chain and leaving the rest of us in a terrible situation. The hourly wages in America are declining. America is no longer the America that it was just a decade ago, and we are certainly heading the wrong way on a one-way street, and I don't think you would disagree with what I've just said.
No, I'm in agreement, sir, but we have to know where it's coming from. It is the Aslan movement who's running the White House, and Obama is just a puppet to the Aslan movement. I will be sending you stuff so you will believe that what I'm saying is truth. I, like I told you, I have documentation for everything. If you recall, he, as a matter of fact, Naleo right now is expecting Obama to appoint two more Latinos. But the Latinos that go in, that are elected officials, they have to be a part of the Aslan movement. See, they thought they were going to put Mr. Bill Richardson in, but they didn't have the numbers to put Bill Richardson from New Mexico in for president, if you recall. But the Aslan movement wanted to put Bill Richardson. Then they put Obama. Why? Because Obama is going to be respectfully, again, he's not a natural born citizen, even if he would have been born in right next to me in Douglas, Arizona. Why? Because the two parents have to be United States citizens at the time of the birth of that child.
Well, I know there's a lot of controversy about the president's qualification to be president. I'm going to leave it at that. But we are over. Alice, I want to tell you that I appreciate your call. I appreciate that you're listening. I will be in touch with you. I don't know if I agree with everything you've said. It certainly provides food for thought for me. And I hope it provides food for thought for my audience. You know, this is about thinking critically and about paying attention to what's going on and becoming involved in our government. For far too long, far too many people have sat out the game. They've allowed themselves to not be engaged in the process, and we're paying a price for it. You know, I always like to tell people that when we go to restaurants, we're very specific about the food that we want to eat, the way we want it prepared. We need to be no less specific in dealing with our elected representatives. You know, I always like to make the point that democracy is not a spectator sport. For far too many Americans, it has become a spectator sport. And as I say, we are paying a price. I hope that at this point in time, enough Americans will wake up to what's going on and what's not going on and make their voices heard very clearly to those people that were elected to represent all of us, not only in Washington, but in state capitals and in city halls throughout this great country. Alice, I want you to know how much I appreciate your call. I will be in touch with you. I have your phone number up on the screen here. Sometime this weekend I will get a hold of you, but I do appreciate the call. So I thank you for calling in.
And I thank you, sir, for the time. And I would just tell people, please check the internet and then see what I'm doing. Do the research, and you will see that I'm correct.
Okay, that's fair enough. folks, as I said, democracy is not a spectator sport. This program is a celebration of the First Amendment. It's not only about freedom of speech, freedom of press, and freedom of religion. Certainly those are three of the underlying principles of the First Amendment. But it's also about the right to peaceably assemble and the right to seek redress of grievances. As the late, great Terry Anderson, radio talk show host, used to say, if you ain't mad, you ain't paying attention. We certainly have grievances. And this program is designed to provide a place where people can peaceably assemble to exchange ideas and to try to make each other aware of exactly what's going on in this crazy world today. I wish everybody out there a terrific weekend. Alice, I wish you a great weekend. I thank you for the call. And next week, folks, I will be back here, same time, same place. I look forward to seeing you then. For this evening, I thank you, and good night, everybody. Have a great weekend.